Hello, this is Dr. Mark Mervali, Professor of Theology and Mariology at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, and I want to speak to you today about human life. You've heard many presentations and read many things about human life, about the origins of human life, about debates like abortion and euthanasia. Why one more comment on life? The reason, my friends, is rather simple. At no other point in human history have so many people died with so few response to the attack, and that's abortion. Right now, one out of every five children conceived does not make it out of the womb. 20% of humanity is not making it out of the womb, let alone what happens in terms of things like euthanasia and other elements of cloning, in vitro fertilization, etc., in the mode of the disrespect for human life. But history will look back on our age and say, how could such an educated, such a technologically advanced, such a sophisticated society kill so many of its own? How could they be eliminating generations by their own choices? And the answer is pride, it's sin, and it's selfishness. And in some small category, perhaps, a small category, ignorance. So let's deal with the element of ignorance today. In very brief words, I want to summarize why no one should ever consider committing abortion. And I want to deal with the cases that are most often used to justify abortion. So let's start with the pure biological evidence. From the moment of human conception, the union of sperm and egg, there is a unique human genetic structure different from mother and father. Unique genetic human structure means a human being in any book of biology and embryology. Whatever genetic structure you have, that's what you are. If you have the genetic structure of a cow, you're a cow. Of a horse, you're a horse. Of a plant, you get the idea. At the moment of conception, you have a unique human genetic structure to which you only add time and nutrition. Now, logically, metaphysically, philosophically, adding time and nutrition to something doesn't create it. It doesn't start it. It just allows it to grow. So the only thing we add to that unique human genetic structure from the moment of conception is time and nutrition. That means we have to start with a human being. So the biological, the embryological evidence is clear. By 8 weeks, you have heartbeat and brainwave and many other functions. By 12 weeks, you have every system that a human being has outside of the womb. And so the argument of killing a human being based on geography just doesn't make sense. That's like one human being saying to another, if I put you in the closet and I cannot see you and I cannot hear you, no matter what you say, I have the right to kill you. Well, we can't say that about the closet of the womb. We can't say because I can't see you and I can't hear you, even though all of science tells me you're a human being from the moment of conception. We cannot kill this person based on geography, a difference of geography. But let's go after the more common reasons that are given for abortion. And I say this because, my friends, we have to continue to cry out to God to stop this evil. And we have to continue to appeal to people's reason, science, facts, to stop this. People before 1860 might have said, we're always going to have slavery. There's no use to talking about it. Or in the 1930s, when eugenics was happening in Germany, there's always going to be a Third Reich. It's going to conquer the world, and this is going to be the policy. It doesn't help to fight it. There's no fruit to it. We know that didn't happen, and we know it can't be a justification for us now. We have to fight abortion every day. And part of the arm of the battle is reason. So let's ethically examine reasons given for abortion. Number one, convenience, career, financial reasons. If I have a child, it means it's going to be a terrible change in my lifestyle. And I don't mean to underestimate what that means. You see, kids are supposed to be a massive change in lifestyle. That's what's supposed to happen with children. So when you have a child out of wedlock, when you have a child outside of the context of family life, which should be there in terms of husband and wife, it is going to be a Copernican revolution. It's a huge change. But you cannot justify killing an innocent human being based on significant change. Or finances. What price is on any child's head? What price is on your head? God willing, there's no price on your head because you're infinite in value in the eyes of God. You're invaluable. Your value transcends the state, it transcends the world, and it transcends the Dow Jones. There's no value that can be placed on you. And therefore, we can't kill a child saying he's going to be too expensive. And things like career, we can't say, well, this person would upset my career. That's like saying this person has a job I want. If I kill the person, that job opening is there and that would advance my career. These are all logical reasons of why we cannot do these things. But the deeper reasons tend to be things like life-threatening cases to the mother, rape and incest. And I just want you to know, in terms of accuracy, less than 0.5% have anything truly to do with rape, incest, life of the mother issues. So it's unfair to put that as the justifying reason why we have widespread abortion, and why in the United States we have late-term abortion, which even Western Europe, who seems advanced to us in many ways in terms of secularism, even they do not have that. We lead the world. Sadly, it's us and China leading the world in terms of the abortion measures. Doesn't that tell us something in and of itself? I want to talk about rape and incest. Let's talk about the horrendous evil of rape, or a domestic rape, evil compounded. When you kill the child who has been conceived as a result of rape, you are giving the child a death penalty for something he has not done. The woman is innocent, absolutely. The child is just as innocent. Why would a woman who has experienced such a horrendous evil then do an even greater evil to a child even more innocent, because the child in the womb has done nothing at all? And this is not at all to infer that the woman who is raped has done anything, but we're talking about equal levels of innocence, of personal dignity, of sanctity of life. And I want to give you a theological perspective of how I believe God sees what happens in cases like rape and incest, and there's a pregnancy that evolves. Man can say, a human being can say, a woman can say, and by the way, when I say man, remember, women don't wake up pregnant. Men have to be deeply involved and deeply responsible for the gift of life. And oftentimes, over 60% of women say they felt pressure for the abortion, oftentimes from the man. And he holds that in his conscience. The guilt of that he will be responsible for. But let's talk about rape and incest. This is God's perspective, I believe, on what happens. He is abhorred by the injustice that his daughter, the woman, has received at a moment of rape. But God makes good out of every evil. And God says, even though a great evil has happened, I will bring good. I will bring my image. I will bring life. And many, 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 many women have testified that the child they received, even through the audacity of rape or even incest, has been the child of grace for their life. It's been the child has been the source of the new meaning, of the beauty of life, a new companion, a new sense of constant love and affection between mother and child. That is truly a little foretaste of heaven. So from God's perspective, he's saying, I can make good even out of this evil. I send my image. I send a child. And then what do? We take the good that God is making out of that evil and we smote that image. We destroy the good. So instead of good coming from the evil, we have multiple evil. We have exponential evil, rape leading to murder. Think about that. Think about how God makes good out of every situation. That's part of his omnipotence. That's part of his divinity. He does it for us in all ways. He's going to do it also in cases like rape and incest. And in the case that is perhaps the most heart-jerking, the case of the life of the mother, we leave decisions of life and death to God. We do not directly kill either mother or unborn child. And the percentage of abortions that have any proximity to really the life of the mother being taken is almost off the charts. There's nothing there. Even those who have been posed, even the abortions posed to support the life of the mother. I've met many women who've said, a doctor told me if I have another child, I would die. One woman whose husband I work with has had 5 children since then. My friends, we have to protect life. We have to defend life. It's God making good out of evil in so many cases. And even when it's not a case of rape and incest, he's bringing new life. He's bringing new generation. He's bringing new love. He's bringing genius. He's bringing cures for things that we pain from now, but we're eliminating, we're terminating the next generation. We're terminating priests and nuns. We're terminating scientists who could make advancement in things like AIDS and Alzheimer's. Give God a chance by giving life a chance. Pray with me daily to end abortion and defend life in heart, in articulation, in discussion, in voting, in every way, defend life as God's sacred gift. This is Dr. Mark Miravalle saying thank you. God bless you.